Broadcasting live from more than 600 or something like that affiliates in North America. That includes Puerto Rico, Guam, Canada. You're listening to Coast AM. I am out of the iHeart studios in KOA News Radio Denver. Connie Willis here. Okay, we are talking with Dr. Paul H. Smith about remote viewing. He was in the program with Stargate. And he is telling us about technical dowsing, how it relates with remote viewing, and giving us some really good stories and neat stories to come, I'm sure. I always love these types of conversations because they're always so interesting. I don't know anybody that doesn't enjoy remote viewing and those stories. And now combining technical dowsing and what Paul had said, and Paul, let's see if I get this right, dowsing, we know what the target is, we just don't know where. So we get the little dowsing instruments out and we try to find out where.
That's right.
Okay, we're done. Case closed. Check, please. We're out of here. See you later, Paul. Thank you very much. So how do you do that? Like, you know, because CRV, you put it on paper, you write it down, you know, you do all this stuff. So now, I mean, are you still sitting in, can you do the technical dowsing in just at your desk like you would CRV, or do you have to kind of go to the area? Well, you don't know the area.
Well, it depends. Excuse me. Sorry about that. It depends. Generally speaking, so we've called it technical dowsing, kind of distinguish it from what's usually called field dowsing. So field dowsing is where you're out walking across the land using your dowsing implements to try and find out where to drill for water or where gold might be or oil or whatever it is you're looking for in
gold.
The physical location.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So in what we are calling technical dowsing, you can use it. There's a bunch of different flavors of it. So there is the more obvious one is called map dowsing, where you have a map laid out in front of you and you douse the map. And there's various techniques that I introduce folks to in my dowsing training set, where you can use your instruments with the map as the general frame of reference to try and locate where on that map, corresponding to where on the ground the hostage is or the missing hunter. We used it actually to find a hunter one time who'd gone missing in Idaho. And so on. So that's map dowsing, and that's very useful. And we used that probably almost as much as anything at Fort Meade when we were doing it for the government. But there's also what I call diagram dowsing, which it's more of a way of sorting things out in not in a physical space. But, for example, one of the ways we use diagram dowsing is oftentimes the Coast Guard knew that there was contraband being smuggled in to the United States, but they didn't know what kind it was. And so they'd say, well, have your viewers tell us what kind of contraband it is. Well, if you just ask a remote viewer, well, what kind of contraband it is, it turns into a guess. Because as the conscious mind gets involved, the left brain starts functioning, and it doesn't know what it's doing, so it just comes up with a guess. Well, what we would do is try and get our subconscious, leverage our subconscious here to tell us. So we would draw what I called a fan diagram, and this is a technique I introduced to him. You draw a kind of like a pie-shaped sections on a piece of paper, starting from a central point, and then in one might be cocaine, one you might label heroin, one you might label marijuana or whatever, right? And then you get your pendulum going, and you'd let it settle into a swing, and it would oftentimes pick a particular sector of your fan diagram there. And you could identify what kind of contraband it was that way. And
wow.
And that did indeed work. So, but another way we wanted to use diagrams was to try and understand when the drugs might be landed, right? Because that's crucial to be at the right place at the right time. And so we might have our fan diagram, but it might be 11 p.m., 12 a.m., 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., because we knew roughly when that might be there. We weren't sure exactly when, right? So there were a number of other ways we could use diagrams. So I'll tell you one really good success we had. So we had an informant tell us that there was a ship a container ship coming into a major port in the United States at a certain time, and I'm not going to be more specific than that.
Jacksonville area, Florida? I'm sorry. I'm just throwing something out.
I'm not going to even eliminate possibilities here, okay?
Okay.
So there was a ship with contraband on it. Well, the Joint Task Force folks checked, and they discovered, oh, well, there are six container ships coming in that day, right? And if you know anything about container ships, you know that they're, back then they had hundreds of these semi-trailer-size cargo containers on them if they were loaded up full. So how do you find contraband in this, like, literally a needle in a haystack in this country?
Right, yeah.
So this is actually a one I did, so I know this very intimately. So I did the preliminary remote viewing blind, identified we were talking about ships and contraband, and that was the word we were using is contraband. And so they said, okay, yeah, all right, now you understand the target. You found that out just on your own, okay. So now here's our problem. We have six of these ships. We need to know which one the contraband is on and where on the ship it is.
So at that point, it's okay. You're not polluted at that point, right? You already know what.
I've identified it. That's right.
Okay.
And in fact, now we're at the situation where we know what the target is. We don't know where it is, right?
Okay.
That's the situation we have. So I actually drew a diagram. I drew six ovals, each one representing a ship, and I lettered them, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, whatever, however many six letters is, right? And I said, I am not going to decide which ship those letters correspond to. You assign a ship name to every one of those, but don't tell me about it. I don't want to know.
Hmm.
And then I used my dowsing technique, and I had a slight indication on one ship, but I had a strong indication on another. And I said, my best information here, the best I can do is that it's this ship that has a contraband. They said, okay, all right, that's good. And then they said, all right, now where on the ship is the contraband? And I go, oh, man, that's a challenge, right? Hundreds of containers. So I actually drew a sort of a generalized sketch of a container ship. I knew, of course, how they're configured. And then I doused that container ship from the side and from above, which gives you a three-dimensional cut, right? So I doused that, and I made a mark on both diagrams. I did one from the front, too, but that wasn't necessary, actually. The two were enough.
Did you use a pendulum, or did you use, like, the rods?
Well, I'll tell you about that in a minute.
Okay, okay.
Remind me to answer that question, but that will confuse things if I tell you right now. Okay,
okay, all right.
So so I indicated on my diagram where, and so the Coast Guard stopped that ship, the one I had indicated, and they broke into the cargo at the point I had indicated, and they found the container full of contraband.
Wow. Boy, that was trust, too, by the way. Imagine if there was nothing there.
Well,
wow.
You know,
that's cool,
yeah.
Paul.
Yeah. But here's
that's cool.
There's a funny part to this story. So the informant had used the word contraband. My tasker, when we got to that stage, had used the word contraband. I had used contraband throughout the session whenever I referred to what it was we were looking for. So then towards the end, the tasker says, okay, now we want to know where the drugs are. You think this is where the drugs are, whatever. I said, I don't like that word drugs. It doesn't feel right. We've been talking about contraband. I'm going to continue just to talk about contraband. And she kind of gets this little smirk on her face, you know, kind of humoring the eccentric viewer, right? Okay,
yes.
Okay, we'll do it your way. Coffee,
whatever you want.
Right.
You want some coffee,
right,
too? Yeah, right. Okay.
Now, this is how I described this stuff. I said it was white, and it was lumpy, and it was kind of like Tide laundry detergent that had gotten wet but then had dried in these clumps.
Ooh.
Right? And it was kind of grainy and granular and white and lumpy. And so they, all of a sudden, everybody's thinking, oh, man, he's got a whole container full of heroin that's being smuggled in. They thought that sounded like heroin, okay? So when they break open the cargo, they find the contraband. It's not heroin. What it is rare white coral that was being smuggled into the United States.
Oh, my.
So,
wow.
They were wrong about the drugs, but They were, but it was right. It was contraband.
Yeah. What was that, what they were actually looking for, or did they even know what they
No,
really were
well,
looking for?
they didn't know what they were looking for. The informant had just said contraband.
Oh,
I guess he'd heard that they were smuggling something valuable in, and everybody assumed it was narcotics. But
right.
there's other stuff that is valuable that isn't narcotics that is being smuggled in all the time.
All the time, animals and oh, terrible things like that too. Oh, that's real. They probably looked at it and went, what's this? And they probably didn't even know if it was contraband at that point. It's coral. What's wrong with Paul? It's freaking coral. That's pretty interesting though. Wow.
They had to figure it out. And the good thing about this is all of that work has been declassified. The sessions I worked have been declassified, and a redacted assessment of that project has also been declassified that acknowledges that it was successful.
That's great. Hey, yeah, you deserve a hand. Everybody out there, give them a hand. So what
Well,
was
I'm
the
not so worried about getting credit. What I'm more interested in is people realizing this actually does work.
It does work. It does work. It's amazing too when you do it yourself. When you do it yourself, you're amazed that we all have this ability. We have this ability. Now you guys have taken it further and you have these different tools, and which is awesome because you get to a point. And then you guys, because you've done it, you all did it so much, I mean, daily, that you can say, oh, well, this is how you do that. And this is where you go from here to here. And what do you think you do right now where you feel stuck? I don't know. Well, look what we've realized. This is what you do. It's really an art for sure. And you guys like to call it a martial art. I agree. So what was the deal you didn't want to tell me yet about the dowsing rod
So
or
I
pendulum?
didn't use an instrument.
What would you do?
I used what's called deviceless dowsing. You can use your body as the instrument. And so I did have a tool. I used a ruler, and I ran the ruler across,
Oh,
well,
yeah.
on the six, not ellipses, well, I guess they were ellipses, the six ellipses that I'd sketched on the paper. I just put my finger in each one, and I have this kind of signature tingle that happens when I get a dowsing result, right? And so I was waiting for that tingle to come in, and it did on that particular oval.
Wow.
There, that's what I was
Wow.
looking for, oval, right? Now, when I was trying to locate, see, that's it, but that's, see, that's diagram dowsing. I'm just trying to identify which it was. I'm not trying
Sure.
to find where it was, right?
Right.
So on the cargo ship, on the diagram of the cargo ship, though, I was trying to locate where that contraband was. And so what I did was I just took a ruler and I slid it across the length of the sketch of the container ship. And I was again waiting for that tingle, that kind of signature that tells me that I'm in the right place. And when I hit that, then I marked that, and then I just switched over to the top view and slid the ruler along again, and when I had that tingle again, then I marked that, and that was the location of the container.
That is so amazing. I remember being taught that, and I could not understand what everybody was doing. I'm like, what are you doing? I remember, Lynn had pulled out a ruler, doing that same thing, and touching, and wait for a tingle. How long did that take you to ever learn about the tingle? And
Well, I'll
did
tell
it,
you,
you know,
that's one
I,
of the things I
'cause that's not
learned from
easy.
my dowsing friends at the Chesapeake chapter of the American Society of
Oh.
Dowsers. There was a couple old farmers there who had been dowsing their whole lives, and they had experimented beyond just looking for water. And they actually, I learned a couple of really cool tricks from those guys. And one of them was using the ruler. But they used a pendulum. They used a ruler and a pendulum. And
Does
what
everybody get a
is
tingle, or is that just once in a while? I
Well,
mean,
everybody has a different, who does it that way has a different kind of reaction. Now, the way these guys did it, you could ru run the ruler along and hold the pendulum in the other hand that doesn't have the ruler. Of course, you run the danger of having an artificial movement because you, like, snag the paper or something and your hand moves, right? But what they did, and this was really awesome, but it takes two people to do it. One guy ran the ruler across the map. This was map dowsing they were doing at the time. One guy ran the ruler across the map. The other guy was turned away from him, and he had the pendulum. And he put his hand on the shoulder of the guy who was running the ruler. And the point of this was so that the guy with the pendulum wouldn't be influenced by what he saw on the map. So there's a thing in remote viewing, as you know, called analytical overlay, where your left brain gets in and starts clicking and starts giving you false positives.
Gets
and
in
that
the
even
way.
Applies in dowsing, because if you have a map and it's got identifiable features on it, your left brain may say, well, that looks like a good place for it to be, and give you a false positive, right?
Yeah.
So by doing it the way these guys did, the guy with the pendulum didn't have any idea where on the page that ruler was, and so the presumption was, I'm going to use funny energy talk here, even though I kind of don't really like it very well, but it's somehow picking up the energy of the guy with the ruler, and when the pendulum reacted, then he'd say something to indicate the pendulum was reacting at that point where the guy was on the page, where the other guy was, and it worked. They were really good at it. Very practiced. They're very polished. They'd done this a lot, and I learned that too. It's hard to do if there's only one of you. But if you have two people who are good at this, it's an excellent way to overcome that left brain interference and to just make it as objective as possible in the process.
Man, well, I know some people, they do radionics work, and they use their thumb on all this kind of stuff, and they feel, if you've ever seen a radionics machine, you know, they got little dials on them and these other little things that they rub their fingers on until they get a stick. And that stick is where they're supposed to stop the frequency that's sending out so that they can get whatever intention they're putting into this to happen. So they know, they feel a stick. I don't get a stick. I mean, I'm good with things. I can sometimes get premonitions, and other times I can do some really good remote stuff, viewing stuff as well along the way. I'm not consistent like a lot of people, but can't... I don't get that little sticky thing, or I don't get that little buzz in the finger. I mean, that might be a little gnat on the end of my finger. So when did you realize you had that little thing in your finger where you could feel a tangent?
Well, I can't tell you when. It was sometime between 1987 and...
But at one point, you said, oh, I got it, right? I mean, you didn't just immediately go, I got it, right?
Yeah, I think I just experimented with it at some point there, and
love it.
And you know, we did do practice obviously too, and I just experimented, and then I sort of finally learned it, and it worked. So, and it isn't always just quite like that. I mean, sometimes I'll do deviceless stuff. So I don't know. Do we have time for another story?
Well, we do, but I'm going to cut you off on it.
Oh.
It's okay. Because we'll be coming right back. So we'll wait and we'll save your story for the next one. So you know who we're having later on is Bruce Maccabee. Do you know anything about Bruce?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. I know he's a UFO guy, as I recall, right?
He is, man. I tell you what, he's got the particulars. I can imagine like you and him doing something together and learning some different things and pointing out where maybe these green fireballs are that he talks about. It's still an unsolved mystery. So that's Paul H. Smith that we're talking to. We've got more of him before we bring on Bruce. So stay with us, everybody. Great night. Fun, interesting conversation. And it's, you know, it's all right here. So my name is Connie Willis. You can also catch me on my YouTube channel, or this new thing I'm trying out, Mighty Network. I don't know if you can find it. I'm not totally there yet, but I am there yet. I am there now. But it's called Blue Rock Talk with Connie Willis. And I hope you'll join me there, too, and become a Blue Rocker, someone in the know. So right now, it's Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us. Hello. Welcome back to Coast AM. Connie Willis here. Remember when I mentioned that George Norrie is always out and about, never sleeps, doing Beyond Belief TV, doing the show here, and of course, just running around. Now, today, he was out. He was at the Conscious Life Expo. It's still continuing on, but he was out there today doing his thing. Now, in March, you guys all know about Everett, but that's been sold out, and that's why I tell you, you guys, and why we mention it to you very early, these shows sell out. They're great and fun experiences. So the next one that you can check them out is, and this is one I would love to go to, oh my gosh, it's UFO MegaCon. It's out in Nevada in Laughlin. It's at the Aquarius Hotel, and it's going to be, oh my gosh, exciting. Now, if you ever wonder, you go to our website at coasttocoastam.com, and that's where you're going to see all the information. But this is going to be cool. The 24th through the 30th, that's a long time, right? That is the real deal, folks. So George, he's going to be throwing out prizes and having a good time. Yeah, have you heard him? He does jokes and stuff. I love his jokes. So he's going to be out there doing something that I guess it happened at UFOCon 2016. It's called Who's Telling the Truth Game. And so Tommy Danheiser is going to be a part of it, Lorian Fenton, and there's going to be other radio personalities out there and researchers that are going to convince you they are telling the truth. So it's apparently is a lot of fun. I want to see it myself. You don't want to miss it either. So if you get a chance to go check it out, there's going to be a lot of fun out there, and they got musical entertainment. George is going to sing again, and I hear Elvis will be in the house. Also George Knapp, because that's his area right there, you know? So George Knapp will also be featured at the conference. It is the UFO MegaCon in Laughlin, Nevada. That's March 24th through the 30th. Get your tickets now. Go to our website to learn more, coasttocoastam.com. Welcome back to coasttocoastam.com. Connie Willis here with you, and along with us is I'm going to say that more often, Dr. Paul H. Smith, a remote viewer from the Stargate program, as well as an instructor. And we've been talking about technical dowsing. Now, I want to ask you two quick questions, and one of them is going to be the different types of dowsing, the different types of tools, as well as what do the skeptics think about this?
Okay. So I've already addressed a couple of different types of dowsing. There's the field dowsing, which is usually what you're doing when you're looking for water. And then there is diagram dowsing. There's map dowsing. There's also decisional dowsing. Although I'm not sure, well, we'll get to the implements here in a second. So in decisional dowsing, the idea is, you got to decide between three houses and your analysis pretty much has come up sixes on them. You can use dowsing to give yourself a little bit of an edge because your subconscious can get into the play and give you information that you don't have direct access to consciously in the decision-making process. So, that's probably all you need to know about that right now, but there's that kind of dowsing as well. So you can use, of course, the L-rods that we talked about earlier in the show. You can use pendulums, which you've talked about. And some of these, obviously, in some of them, one set of implements are more useful than others. And of course, then there's the traditional Y rod, which is essentially a forked stick, although there's some new sophisticated versions that are synthetic materials that are shaped in the V shape, and you can use those, and some people have had good success with that. There's even an odd kind of a thing that the Iraqi army was actually using to look for IEDs and stuff. They claimed it worked. I haven't seen any objective data to prove that, but it was an odd thing that some American, enterprising American inventors sold them some of these that they were using to douse, although they didn't know that's what they're doing, but they essentially to douse for IEDs and other maybe dangerous things or whatever. And I can't say where that worked, but it was an interesting application, I thought.
Sure.
You got different kinds of dowsing, and you've got kind of different kinds of dowsing implements, and each one is used a little bit differently, although you can tend to apply them in, you use one instrument differently than you would originally. So, for example, let's say you have, that was kind of a confused statement, but let's say you have L-rods. Normally, normally you use L-rods to go out, looking for water or whatever, walking across the land. But let's say you have an L-rod and you don't have a pendulum. You can use the L-rod actually in diagram dowsing or in map dowsing. Obviously, you can only use one of them if you're doing diagram dowsing, because what you do is, let's say you're looking for what kind of narcotics it is that are being smuggled in. You hold the L-rod in one hand and you program it to decide if a swing one way is a yes and the other way is a no. And you just place your finger in whatever sector that you're trying to test and watch the pendulum, or I'm sorry, the L-rod, how it behaves, and that can give you some feedback, some information.
Unless you have tingle finger, then you don't have to worry about that.
You don't need the rod. That's right.
No rod.
Remote viewing. Yeah, I like that. Now, yeah, that's right. So, so that brings us to the skeptical thing. So what's going on here?
Well, real quick before you do that, when you had just said you program into, you know, before you touch it or use the rod, you said you program it in. So that's pretty much saying we're looking for, it's kind of, go ahead.
What you do is, so you need to know, you and the pendulum or the rod have to agree on what a yes indicator is and what a no indicator is, right? Or a right or not right or whatever. And so there's two ways to do it. One is you can say, show me a yes or show me a no. And then you say, show me a yes. And let's say you have a pendulum and it swings back and forth for a yes. And you say, show me a no. And it swings left to right for a no. Or some people will just let it do it itself. That's, you're letting it do it itself there. So, but some people will tell it, okay, this is going to mean yes, and this is going to mean no, and swing it in different ways, right?
Getting on the same page.
Programming, yeah. Essentially, what you're doing is, it isn't that the pendulum itself knows what it's doing. It's your subconscious, right? Your subconscious, and it's working through a thing called the ideomotor effect. At least that's my working theory on this, right? So what that has to do with brings us actually to the skeptics. So the skeptics, when they see dowsers and the instrument move in the dowser's hands, the dowsers seem very sincere. They're not doing it on purpose. They're not trying to fake it. It's really happening, they believe. So the skeptics look at that and they say, well, these guys are sincere. They're just wrong. So what's really happening is there's this thing called the ideomotor effect. And what that means is, We have this underlying system, and I'm going to be very general here. The psychologists listening in are probably going to think this is a lame explanation, but I'm trying to make it as simple as possible, right? So we have this underlying system that where, for example, if you are sitting in the stands at a baseball game and you have always wanted to be a baseball pitcher and you're watching the pitcher very intently down on the mound, and as he's winding up and throwing the ball, you're imagining doing that yourself. Even though your hand and your arm don't move, your mind actually causes those muscles that would be working if you were actually doing it, causes them to just move in little, very tiny amounts of tensing and relaxing. And so the muscle movement is there, but it's so subtle that nothing actually moves physically, at least in an observable way. And that's, that's what you can call the ideomotor effect. So what the skeptics would say is a dowser gets out there and they subconsciously have a general idea about the lay of the land where they might find water, and they're not concentrating on that being the place. But as they go across the field and they approach it, then their tacit thinking says, oh, that's the place there. And then the ideomotor effect kicks in, and the rods, if that's what they're using, amplify it. They work like an indicator on a gauge or something, needles on a gauge, right? And so the ideomotor effect, so this is all imagination according to the skeptics. The dowser sort of has in the back of his mind where, or her, there are female dowsers too, the back of his or her mind where they're likely to find water, and when they get to that point, then the ideomotor effect kicks in, guided by their subconscious, and makes it happen. Okay. So, but here's the interesting thing about this. First of all, I know dowsing works, and I know it doesn't, and I know that it isn't imaginary. Okay, I know that it's actually had success in a way that can't be explained by normal physical processes. What I think is happening is the skeptics are right about the ideomotor effect, but they're not right about the thing that makes it happen. What I think is going on is the dowser is working, the signal, we call it the signal line or remote viewing, comes from the universe, to speak in very grandiose terms, comes from the universe into the viewer's subconscious, and the subconscious then causes this subtle muscle contraction to happen, the ideomotor effect, and causes those implements to work and do what they do in just like a gauge or an indicator on a device. So the object, the devices you use, the rods, the pendulum, whatever, they have no virtue in and of themselves. All of this is coming out of the viewer, sorry, the wrong discipline, out of the dowser, and they're it's using those implements as the indicators. And can I prove this theory? No. Because we're dealing with something very subtle that we don't have scientific instruments that can detect it. But it's a very plausible explanation of how this happens. And the way the successes dowsers have seem to suggest that this is that's right. So there you go.
Well, yeah, let me see if I can how I can ask this. Kind of go with me here for a minute. So Okay. The answers are within, basically. A lot of people call within the universe. People call it God. People call it the Google of the world, right? I mean, there's all sorts of things. So it comes out of, but it's within us, and people call it intuition.
So Ingo Swann called it the Matrix.
Oh, I love it. Of course. That's so cool.
Yeah, of course. Come on. And he actually had that term before anybody else did.
Love it. He was cool.
So he called it the Matrix, and it's just like this giant repository of information in the universe and hyperspace, if you will, whatever. I mean, there's lots of ways you could talk about it. So the answer is not in the person, in the dowser, or in the remote viewer, but the answer is out there. But the dowser or the remote viewer is hooked into that universe, that repository of information, and that then becomes the downloader, if you will, or the conduit. I actually like the word conduit better, the conduit of that information. The trick with dowsing is just figure out a way to get it out, objectified in the real world so that you can actually use it. And that's what these instruments do, what the L rods or the Y rod or the pendulum, whatever. What they do is allow you to bring out the intuition, if you will, you use that word, bring it out into the real world so that it can be used.
So question. Okay. Whether it's totally out there in the universe, then it goes into us, or totally within us at all times. I mean, I guess that's something people could argue, right?
Yeah. So it's a metaphysical question, so there's no real answer to it that you can prove. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Right. So coming from within, whatever, if it comes from out there or within, it's still got to come out using a tool. And we have to work with figuring that out, or even take classes to learn this and use these different tools. What happened in the world one day that we already have this here? Why can't it just go right up to our conscious and spit it out without having to work to get it?
Well, that has to do with human psychology, right? So in principle, you should be able to do that. But the problem is that
did we lose it away sometime? Did somebody push it down from us?
No. I don't think we've ever had it in a real blatant way. I don't think we've ever had it so that it was always unmistakable because of the way our minds are constructed, our brains are constructed. So, again, very simplistically, I'm going to talk about left brain, right brain. So the right brain, the right hemisphere, is tied very directly into the subconscious and into the senses. And, in fact, there's some speculation maybe the right brain is the subconscious or is where the subconscious resides. The left brain, its job is to interpret what the right brain comes up with. And so it gets that information, and then it decides what to do with the information. When you're dealing in a very in a high-noise channel, which remote viewing and dowsing are, and with very subtle signal, which in both cases they are, the left brain doesn't have enough information to make good judgments. And so it will oftentimes take that information and give you the wrong answer on that. It's like a friend comes up at the end of a conversation you're having with another friend, hears the last half of the last sentence, and then jumps to this totally ridiculous conclusion, right?
Get out of here, punk.
Yeah. Yes. The left brain does that all the time in this kind of environment. So the trick in remote viewing and in dowsing is to learn how to not regard the left brain's information as anything to trust, and allow the right brain or the intuitive part of you to bring the information out as uncontaminated as possible, because that's when you have success.
Love this stuff. Could talk about it forever. But before you go, I want you to, I'm hoping you can still tell us that story you wanted to tell, but I also want to, I want everybody to know your books and all your neat classes and all that kind of stuff.
Well, first let me, you know, we've been talking about dowsing. And I suspect there are some folks out there who'd like to know how they can learn how to do it themselves.
Right? No, not at all. No. Yes, absolutely. Yes,
right, yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
let them know that they need to have a DVD player.
They do have to have a DVD player, but, you know, they're easy to find if you don't have one, right? We've been talking about technical dowsing, but the website to order this particular my DVD set is the learndowsing.com. So the word learn, the word dowsing, just smash them together, learndowsing.com, and you can order it, and you'll have it quickly. And if you work through this, I've had folks, well, I'll tell you something else here in a second, but I've had folks, lots of folks who give testimonies who say, I mean, I've really had really good success with this, and that we're able to apply it in their lives. Now, let me tell you one application somebody used. Now, this dowsing set isn't designed to win the lottery, but I had one of my folks who got this set and learned the techniques and then modified them to solve the lottery. They didn't win the full lottery. They didn't get all the numbers, but they got enough of them to win over $100,000. I don't
recall
now it was $108,000 or $180,000 or something like that.
Wow.
But they emailed me and called me and said, "Oh, this is so exciting. I used your set and I won." You know, I'm not going to promise, obviously, that you guys are going to win the lottery. I'm not going to promise you're going to win $100,000. But I know one guy at least who, using my dowsing set, successfully won the lottery. So that was pretty exciting. It won
yeah.
part of the lottery. Won at least $100,000 with it. And he wouldn't share any of it with me. Can you believe that?
I would. You know what? I mean, Lynn helped me do my little win any lottery book with the little dowsing, and he will get some if anything happens. There's just no question about it. But you know what? There's a lot of people that probably want it and didn't tell you. So so they didn't have to worry about that. So really quickly, tell us where else you can go, because we're going to have to.
So, yeah, right. So that's learndowsing.com if you're interested in dowsing. I also, if you want to learn remote viewing and you don't have the option for a live course, which, of course, I have a fully leaded live remote viewing training program, I have a set called the Remote Perception. It's a remote perception, it's called. If you look for remoteperception.com, you'll find it. And it is essentially one of my basic courses compressed down to be able to do it as a home study course. So that's remoteperception.com. And if you're interested in just a book, an inexpensive way of getting introduced to dowsing, you can look up The Essential Guide to Remote Viewing, which is my most recent book. Again, The Essential Guide to Remote Viewing. You can get off Amazon, or you can go to guidetoremoteviewing.com and get a signed copy from me. So.
All right. Yeah, I got to sign one. I thought you'd at least say, "Hey, Connie, woman, you're the hottest, coolest chick ever in the world. You're awesome." I just got Paul on there. It says, like, Paul Smith.
Well, first of all, a book with only a signature is actually more valuable than one that's dedicated to somebody.
Oh, that's right. All right. Well, thank you. We'll go with that.
Okay.
Paul, thank you so much.
Oh, you bet.
It was fun. You take care.
We'll have to do this again.
You got it. And we'll see you on Blue Rock Talk, too, okay? Take care, Paul. Great guy, a lot of fun. You guys learn remote viewing if you haven't. So coming up, Bruce Maccabee. We're going to learn about these green lights. Crazy stuff, cool stuff too. Interesting, still a mystery. Coast to coastam.com. Thanks.